Welcome to Sounds of the Bazaar live internet radio, live from Online Educa in Berlin. Online Educa is the biggest, probably, technology-enhanced learning conference in Europe. There's around 2,000 people here in a huge hotel, the Intercontinental Hotel, exhibition spaces. And outside, we've got around 5 centimetres of snow, which is making it really interesting, and the snow is still coming down. Anyway, we've got a fabulous programme lined up for you today. We'll be coming out today for 40 minutes. Another programme tomorrow at 11 o'clock. We've got great guests. I'm going to hand over to Eileen Luca, who's co-presenting today, and she's going to tell you something about the run-up and introduce our other presenters.
Okay, I would like first to introduce you to the team who's going to do the interviews with our fabulous interviewee.
Hello, I'm Jenny Hughes, and this morning I'm going to be interviewing Helen Keegan and hopefully Doug Belshaw.
And you?
Hello, my name is Judith Seipold, and I'm going to talk to Steve Wheeler and maybe John Trexler as well.
And the last is Klaus online.
Hi, I'm Klaus Rumler from University of Bremen. I will talk to Jody Fraser in a couple of minutes and with Larry Johnson.
So you can see or you can hear that we have great topics coming up. We will talk about Mobile Africa, Web 3.0, virtual classroom, practice development, and other challenging and interesting issues.
Yes, that's Sounds of the Bazaar, live from Berlin. It's the third programme we've done. It's one of our favourites on the conference circuit, Online Educa Berlin. It's great sounds, great music. I'm going to go hand over now to Dirk Stieglitz, who didn't get mentioned there, who's sitting behind the sound deck. He's going to be playing you a bit of music, and we'll be back with Josie Fraser.
This is Josie Fraser. Could you introduce yourself a little bit, just that we get to know you and your rough working fields?
Yeah, I'm delighted to. Good morning, Berlin. Good morning, Online Educa. I'm really happy to be here this year. And I'll be speaking tomorrow, and I'm delighted to be sharing a stage platform with some fantastic people as well. My name is Josie Fraser. I'm a social and educational technologist by trade. That means I look at how we can use technology to support teaching, learning, and social engagement and participation. I'm very interested in digital identity, very interested in digital communities. Currently, I'm employed by Leicester City Council as their ICT strategy lead. And I'm looking at how we can use technology to support the transformation of education across the primary and the secondary estate. So that's prior to going on to university and up to higher education, working with children from 0 years right up to 19 years old.
Okay, walking over the court here, looking at the stands, what was really striking to you?
The mints this morning. I've had a little look at the stands, but I can't. I arrived very, very late last night because of the snow. I was struggling like everybody else, so I've only had a little look around so far. The thing that I really like about Educa is the buzz, really, and also the diversity of people here. We've got over 200 countries represented this year, which is fabulous. It means that there's a proper international dialogue going on. I was talking to a fantastic woman from Slovenia this morning who's looking at very similar issues to me in terms of staff development and digital literacy. So it was a lovely breakfast.
On the social level, have you been preparing yourself for this conference in any kind of way?
Socially, have I been? Well, I've been having some early nights, so I've been looking after myself in that way. I've been making sure that I eat healthy foods. so that I'm ready. Graham's laughing at me, but it is true. I'm the picture of health, if only you could all see me. I've been looking after myself, ready for the 3 days of mayhem that Educa always is, yes.
Okay, and staying healthy in this cold weather adds a special quality to this. Will you look at this conference for the next 2 weeks in a special way? So, for the next 2 days in a special way. So, what do you expect from Online Educa?
There's some fantastic sessions. I really like the fact, I think there's been a real shift into an appreciation of the impact and the mainstreaming of the social web. I think that's really evident in the kinds of talks and the topics that we'll be looking at here. And that's fabulous for me because I'm very, very interested in that whole area and taking advantage of and recognising the kind of shifts that are going on socially and economically across Europe and obviously across the world as well. So, yes, very, very excited and pleased about that.
Okay, and then two questions. Have you been here before? And have you witnessed some transitions, some switching in main fields of Online Educa itself?
I was here 2 years ago for the first time. I was speaking on a mobile learning panel, doing some of the little bits and pieces as well. I was actually working with Graham that year too, and I was here representing JISC's Emerge project, looking at users and innovation. So we came over with a whole bunch of projects from the UK who are looking at using new and emerging technologies to support teaching and learning. And I had a fabulous time. So I'm delighted to be back this year as a keynote. In terms of a shift that's happened, I think I remember actually sitting down with somebody 2 years ago and having a conversation about what the point of Twitter was at that point and trying to convince somebody that actually it was very useful in terms of developing learning networks, getting information, sharing information, developing online community. And I think that kind of topic's on the agenda now. So we've seen that kind of shift in that recognition of the broad support and benefit of tools that aren't necessarily designed for teaching and learning at all, but can really, really well support our broad aims.
This is also my my view as I'm using Twitter currently for my own learning environment. As we came here as learners, using our own environment to prepare ourselves to connect to each other. So Twitter is very important, not only for educational settings, but also for our own learning environments.
I'm a platform neutral kind of girl, so I wouldn't promote one particular site or service above others, but I must say that I do love Twitter. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Josie Fraser. Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you too. And we are heading over to Larry Johnson. I'm hoping that Klaus will get some more recipes how to fight this cold in Berlin and what to expect from e-learning. Back to you, Klaus.
Okay, Larry Johnson, could you introduce yourself a little bit and your main fields of practice?
Well, certainly. I'm Larry Johnson. I'm the CEO of the New Media Consortium based in Austin, Texas. It's a delight to be here in Berlin at Online Educa and to be part of the excitements in the crowd and all the learning that's going on here. My own career has taken me through pretty much every position on a university campus, from faculty all the way up to president. For the last 10 years, I've been with the New Media Consortium looking at the future of emerging technology and where it's going to take us in our learning enterprise.
Okay, for the guys out there who might not know the New Media Consortium, what is it?
It's a group of hundreds of universities around the world. Some of the most prestigious, if you were to make a list of the top universities in the world, most of them would be on our member list, along with about 50 of the world's top museums. So it's an interesting and eclectic kind of group. A community of innovators is probably the simplest way to think of it.
And what's their main output? So I've heard of the Horizon Report before, but what is it?
Well, the Horizon Report is one of many projects that we do. It's one of the, it's probably our best known project these days. It's a research effort we've been doing for 9 years, and we've been looking at the way that education absorbs emerging technology over that time, and across the world as a whole, but also in regions like Australia and New Zealand, in Southeast Asia, in Latin America, and in individual sectors like the K-12 sector and the higher ed sector as well. And so over that time, what the Horizon Report has become is a trusted report that people anticipate. It comes out every year to help them to do with their strategic planning around technologies.
Okay. The Horizon Report, what do you think about the impact of the report?
It's a bit sobering to be one of the authors of the report, because it's read by quite a few people around the world. We estimate somewhere around 1 million readers a year for the report, which makes you want to make sure that you get all the typos out of it for sure. But the people use it to provoke conversations around policy, around how to implement things, around professional development needs, around the sorts of infrastructure their campuses needs. It's used in lots and lots of ways, and it's used by policymakers as well. We just came from a meeting in New Zealand where we had convened policymakers from around the country who were using the Horizon Report to help to frame their thinking for the next several years. And we're doing the same thing with the government of Singapore to create their next 5-year plan for educational technology. So it's used in lots of significant ways.
So relating to online education, you really think that there is an impact of the Horizon Report to educational settings or to policy making in terms of education?
Well, I wouldn't take credit for the report itself having the impact. I think the impact comes from the ways that people use the report. Mm-hmm. The impact comes from the questions that it enables people to ask, the doorways that it opens for them to think about things differently. That's where the impact comes from. The report itself is just a catalyst.
Mm-hmm. And what I've heard from your report is that currently the Horizon Report seems to be very important in the Asian countries, including Australia and so on. But what about Europe, or what about Central Continental Europe?
Well, that is a region that we haven't focused on explicitly. It's one of the reasons why I'm happy to be here in Berlin at this meeting, is to begin the conversations to perhaps look at doing something that is centered here within Central Europe. That would be fantastic. And so we're talking with folks that work with the European Union and universities across the continent to see where the interest is. And it seems like that there may be some opportunities. We'll see.
Okay, fine. This sounds very good. This sounds like new contacts, new connections, new experts maybe for the Horizon Report, or for the gathering of new emerging issues. What would you at the moment see as the non-mentioned new emerging field which will come up, or will come up for the future?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think that most of us have a pretty good sense in a group like this of what's on the way for education, because education traditionally is not an early adopter, but we tend to adopt things that already exist. The most interesting thing that's out there and what everybody's talking about here is the impact of mobile devices on learning. And we've been talking about that for years, actually, but it really feels like that the conversation has changed, and I'm hearing it a lot here at Online Education Berlin, everywhere I go.
This is very interesting, because to me, and from the stats, it shows that mobile devices have arrived in everyday lives of the people outside educational settings. So as you said, education itself is not an early adopter. So first of all, we are some years behind concerning the, uh, or following the Horizon report, where it says that, for example, augmented reality will come, location-based services were mentioned before even, where mobile devices aren't even mentioned at the moment. So on this conference, we are witnessing mobile devices themselves just emerging in the field. Can you add
Well,
to
it's
this?
Important to remember that the Horizon Report looks out 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at things like augmented reality, that's really targeted at 3 years from now, mm-hmm. that it's going to become important. That work that you put in now to begin understanding it will allow you to become an early adopter yourself as an institution. But for most institutions, it's still some ways away.
Okay, thank you very much for this bright future insight, and maybe we'll have the pleasure to talk again in 3 years to check if this really happened. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Klaus. And I think we all need some music to warm up here in Berlin. And now we are talking to Jan, Eric and Tabea about the Gateway project and about the school to work and university to work transition with Web 2.0 technologies.
Hi, Tabea, Eric. Hello. We've got two guests this morning, both working on the Gateway project. Now, I'm really glad to meet you both because I've heard a lot about the Gateway project. I've heard your name so often, I feel as if I know you. I missed the workshop yesterday. I'm really sorry about that. But can you bring me up to speed on the Gateway project?
Okay, very shortly. So this is a European project within the framework of the ICT program, and it's 8 partners of us thinking about solutions how to support transitions from school to work or from university to work with the help of Web 2.0 tools. And what we have done up to now is just researched the main transition procedures. We have looked at cases, we have spoken to young people to find out about their needs, what went wrong, what went right, how could you support them further, and we are now on our way to build platforms that will be different from the different partners to provide some information or some support, some tools, how they could enhance their learning and transitions.
Okay, can I, Eric? Mm-hmm. Eric is so tall, I can hardly reach.
All right.
Eric, what's your role on the project?
Our part is to study and help students going from higher education to work. And in the Swedish context, we are working quite closely with a student organization called ISEC. And they have made a very good arrangement for their members to get internships internationally. And so they have really started how to help in the transition process. So we will take much of what they already are doing, to enhance that further. For instance, many of the members are using Facebook and other social media, and to exploit their social networks when it comes to knowing more about a potential new workplace, a new city, how to adjust to the new conditions in another country, and that kind of support.
Okay, I've got a real selfish interest in this project, okay, because I've got two sons. One of them is just starting his first year at university, and one graduated last year. So what are the issues that they're facing? Because they don't tell their mum anything.
Okay, I think the main issue for them is that they face a world where their options wide significantly, but on the other hand, they have different resources, they have different certificates to enter the job world. For them, it's very important to find the right ways, because there are tracks. You know, you can end up in a job you don't like, you can end up in a training that doesn't bring you forward but brings you backwards, actually. And for those from school to work, specifically those who have not the very good certificates, for them it's problematic to find an appropriate job field. And of course, some of them need additional assistance. So for them, it might be interesting to have a training on, for example, ICT, or a training regarding language, or a training on you know, how to use a certain how to use a certain technique in some special field. So for them, there are so much support available. First of all, they don't know about the rights, probably, about the right ones to help them. And second, if they choose one, it could be that this is not perceived by the employer as a good one. So if they go then apply with a certificate, the employer might say, well, yeah, I know that organization and it's not a good one. So the issue for us is to try to engage them to find out options that really help them. And what we found out in the discussion yesterday especially is that it's important for them to play around a little with options, not to think about that it's a really tough thing they have to do, but to really take their time to find out what they like.
Okay, Eric, I'm coming back to you now. Yeah. Going back to my children.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm just thinking, at what point does intervention become interference?
I didn't get that.
Young people are notorious for not wanting other people, like their parents, like their teachers, to interfere in their lives. At what point does intervention become interference in their lives? Will they resent this sort of intervention?
I think higher university students, they have got their own personality form. And perhaps the parents are important, but they are losing their role in the specific transitions they are preparing for. Of course, it's very good to have a supportive family, and we have a number of cases where the students are, so to say, supported and by the parents to take some risks, which is quite important in this transition process.
So where do you see the project going next?
Well, towards the platform. There's some tools that hopefully help some people from their way, from university to work or from school to work. It will be up, let's say, in the next 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, depends on how long we take to collect all the tools and data.
So when can we expect to see this live? When am I going to be able to use it?
Just to give a careful answer, because I want them to see that platform when it's ready, probably May or June in 2011.
Really looking forward to it. Tobias, thank you very much. Eric, thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, live from Online Educur Berlin. And if you were here at the start of the program, you know I said it's all a bit chaotic today because of the snow. And because of the snow, the keynote speech overran by about half an hour. And suddenly we're flooded with people all around us. for all the people who've just come out and wondered what's going on here, this is Sounds of the Bazaar live internet radio, live from Online Educa Berlin. I'm very happy now handing over to Judith, who's going to be talking to John Traxler.
Welcome, John Traxler. It's good to have you here. You are one of the most famous people in the area of mobile learning. And to start with, I would ask you to introduce yourself a little bit and to tell the audience what mobile learning is.
Hi. Well, this is my fourth or fifth or sixth time at Online Educa. It's actually also the fifth year of e-learning Africa, and I've been to all of those, and I've been interested in the opportunities and the development that mobile learning has had through both of these venues, these two vehicles. As you say, my interests are in mobile learning, but specifically what mobiles can do in a sub-Saharan context.
Okay. When you have a look at the landscape of mobile learning in Central Europe, which are the differences to mobile learning in Africa?
Goodness, well, there are lots of obvious ones to do with infrastructure and the economies, but there are actually, I think, more subtle ones about different ideas about pedagogy and instruction and learning and how societies and communities and individuals look at learning, how much they differ. So I think when we look at how we can use mobile technologies in Africa, we need to look not only at the challenges in terms of infrastructure and the obvious physical challenges, but actually also the differences in culture. And I think we may have overlooked that many, many times.
Okay, are there any things you think we can learn from mobile learning in Africa?
Goodness, that is an interesting question. I think actually, to some extent, organizations, research organizations, use Africa, especially South Africa, as a kind of research environment. And they learn about how to make the technology and how to make the learning work in very adverse environments. And I think we can look at how to bring that learning back into a European environment, maybe in rural environments, in disadvantaged communities, and see how we can learn from them.
So it's very much about infrastructure?
I think that's always going to be the obvious challenge, but I think we shouldn't let that take too much of our attention away from cultural differences, pedagogic differences, and we risk thinking, solve infrastructure and we've solved the problem. I think solve infrastructure and we can look at the problem.
So what else than the mobility of devices is mobile learning?
I think there are lots of things. I mean, one is the obvious privacy of the devices. And in some communities, maybe some communities for women, that's actually extremely important. I think there's also the increasing availability, if you like, in the kind of retail domain of very, very powerful devices that know about location and context and are able to capture and generate ideas and images and transform us from being the consumers of learning to the creators of it, and a very personalized learning.
But this means big challenges for educational institutions. This means big challenges for educational institutions.
I think this is challenging for educational institutions. It takes learning outside educational institutions, and maybe it redefines learning in ways that institutions, because they're institutional, have trouble keeping up with. So I think there's a great challenge for institutions staying relevant, staying credible. And it's got to be just better than we give you a degree, so you're going to learn from us.
So to close with, where do you see potential to connect e-learning and m-learning? So we are at one of the biggest e-learning conferences and I'm talking to you about mobile learning. So we need something to bring this together.
I'd be quite happy if we didn't bring them together, actually, because I think there's always a risk of mobile learning being portrayed as a rather impoverished but portable version of e-learning. I think e-learning is much more obviously around institutions and organisations, and I think if there is creative friction with mobile learning rather than an easy alignment, then so much the better. Make them uncomfortable, I say.
Okay, thank you very much, John Trexler, and I hand over to Eileen.
Thank you very much, and I'm glad that we had John here online, because tomorrow we will hope to bring some more voices from Africa to the show. So make sure that you switch on the Sounds of the Bazaar live tomorrow. And I'm now handing over again to Judith and Steve Wheeler. And Steve has yesterday explained Web 3.0 in 7 minutes. So let's see how many time he needs today.
Welcome, Steve Wheeler. I'm glad that you are here.
I'm glad to be here as well. It's very difficult to get across from the UK at the moment with all that snow, isn't it?
Steve, you was introduced to me as one of the technology and learning gurus.
Oh.
And you are very specialized at the moment in Web 3.0. So I don't have any clue what Web 3.0 is. And as Eileen mentioned, you are able to talk about this and explain it to me within 5 minutes, and I would be happy to learn more.
Well, I mean, Web 3 is just another name for what's happening on the web out there now. We had Web 1 and Web 2, and they're really false dichotomies, really. It's a progression of development of the web. Now, Web 3, if there is such a thing, is really all about connecting things more intelligently. It's really all about what we would call... I suppose things like recommender systems are part of what we would consider to be Web 3, because they are more intelligent than what we'd be able to do on our own. It's a built-in intelligence within the system which allows us to be a bit smarter ourselves, I think.
Okay, so it looks very much as it would be kind of semantic web, maybe, or the devices who connect themselves.
Well, yes and no. I mean, semantic web is just one way of talking about Web3. There are lots of other aspects to it as well. I'm thinking about the devices that we use. They'll become more smarter as well. I'm also thinking about the connections that we make, not just with information, but with people as well. So the whole idea... I'm being pushed around here by Graham Atwell. He's always pushing me around. but the point is when you're connecting with people and with information, then it becomes very much more powerful. And that's what we're trying to do, I think, with Web 3, if there is such a thing.
So the world is getting more and more connected. Where are the challenges and the opportunities for learning in schools with mobile technologies? Or is it not so much about learning in schools anymore?
I think it's about learning in school and out of school. We know for a fact that 80% of learning takes place outside the school gates. A lot of people have done the statistics on this. But the biggest challenge, I think, for schools today is to try and incorporate more mobile technology into the formal learning setting. That's not happening in a lot of schools, because a lot of teachers and a lot of schools are worried about the disruptive and distractive elements of mobile technologies. But I think that once we get there, once we start... Hello, Doug. Doug Belshaw's just walking by waving at me there. He's got a name check now because of that. But so the point is, if we do bring mobile phones into schools more, I think we'll see a huge revolution in the way children learn more. What we do is we take them into school and we say, okay, switch off your mobile phones. When we do that, I think we switch off kids as well, because that's their element. That's what they do and that's what they like to do. So if we take that away from them, we're kind of taking away a part of their thinking mechanism, if you like. That's the biggest challenge to me, getting it integrated into schools.
Yes, but it's not only about the infrastructure, it's also about teaching methods and... teaching methods and how teachers have to deal with the knowledge and the skills people have, or students have.
Well, sure. I mean, but students have those skills already. All of my kids and all of their friends, they're always texting each other. They're always Facebooking each other using their BlackBerrys or their smartphones. It's not so much about getting the kids to use it, because they will use it. 37% in a recent poll of children in a British school said that they actually used their mobile phone when they were banned in schools. They still use them. And those were the ones that admitted using them. So kids will still use their mobile phones in school. Why don't we just take it and incorporate it into the lesson itself? I think that's a sensible move forward. When you're talking about teachers not having the skills, teachers are subject experts. teachers are pedagogy experts. Why do they necessarily need to also be experts in technology? Some of them will be, but surely those are the ones that should support the colleagues who aren't as adept at technology. I think we've got, as one of the guys in the keynote said earlier on, we've got to be team players now, not solo evangelists.
So, Steve, we moved a bit away from this Web3O thing, but to close with, I would like to ask you if you have some recommendations for teachers who are interested in learning with technologies in the classroom. Are there any resources you could recommend?
There's a lot of blogs out there from people who are doing the early kind of experimentation in this area. So find the blogs out there, the specialist blogs which deal with these subjects, and subscribe to them. Also, try and connect with people through personal learning networks like Twitter. Find the experts in the personal learning networks. And follow them on Twitter or follow them on Facebook, whatever. It's the social networks that are going to make the difference in the way we share and organize knowledge. So that's my advice to people. Follow the social networks.
Thank you very much, Steve Wheeler.
Thank you very much.
And now we are going to Jen, and Jen will talk to Helen Keegan, who has been last year on the show too, I guess. And many times. And let's see how what Helen has to say.
Helen, really good to see you again. I haven't seen you for 2 years, possibly.
I know.
Helen Keegan is the only person with more online identities than I've got. Helen, we started a talk last night, but Just bring me up to date on what you're doing, what you're thinking, where you've been.
Okay, well, I'm a lecturer and researcher at the University of Salford in the UK. I work in computing science and engineering, but I basically do loads of social stuff, so it's absolutely fascinating working with techie students, but taking quite a kind of socio-cultural perspective to their practice. So I get our learners to develop a professionalised online presence while they're at uni using a range of different platforms.
What does that actually mean? Sorry.
Well, basically, a guided digital identity development, which is very learner-centred. I get the learners to think, well, what do you want to do when you leave university? And let's develop that presence now. And the kind of the work they do, I mean, it's amazing because it's very, as I say, it's very learner-centred, very future-focused. It's very much up to them what they do, but there's a lot of discussion and awareness raising around issues of privacy, public, private, ethics, copyright, licensing. So it really empowers the learners to take control of their own, you know, productions in terms of audio, video, and develop work showcase sites, personal learning networks. And what that then enables us to do is to sort of cross the boundaries between education and industry. The really exciting thing that's been happening in the last year or so is that industry thought leaders and CEOs are finding our students' blogs and are commenting on them, not realising that they're the blogs of students.
Really? That's brilliant.
So the motivation levels just go through the roof. They're like, my God, I'm being listened to in my industry and I'm not even there yet. So it's fantastic. It's really exciting for the students. Another major project that I've been working on for the last couple of years is getting audio and video students to make short films using the devices in their pockets, so their mobile phones. So it's fascinating to see what happens there because of the generative constraints of the medium. So it really challenges their preconceptions in terms of filmmaking and disciplinary boundaries. The work they're coming up with now is very exciting, and it's developing into a genre of its very own, you know, mobile phone filmmaking. So it's really cutting edge stuff that they're working on there. But it's about learning through discontinuity. So using a technology that challenges their practice, challenges everything that they've been taught. So it's very much about taking them out of their comfort zone and getting them to unlearn and relearn. And I think that's something that we can do with our students, something really exciting, using technology, just challenging their conceptions of their discipline.
When you say challenging, it sounds really subversive, Helen Keegan.
Yes.
I mean, how does the rest of the institution see this?
Definitely favourably now. I think people were a little worried a few years ago, but it's exciting times at Salford because we're opening a new campus at Media City UK. The BBC are kind of moving up half their operations, and we're working very closely with them. And so there's a real kind of, you know, a sense of excitement and support for more subversive practices, basically. You know, opening up the institution, crossing roles. You know, I like to think of the students as co-investigators. I see it as we operate within a community of inquiry. You know, I can trigger discussions, but the discussions really come from them. And I think that's really important when you're talking about issues of privacy, ethics. Everybody has their own tale to tell, and some really fascinating stuff comes out of that.
The subversive Helen Keating's actually gone mainstream. I can't believe this.
I know. I'm going to have to get a new job, aren't I?
You will have to get a new job. Hey, there's one more question I want to ask you, because I think it's nearly time for a cigarette, Al.
Uh-huh.
So we're all right. We've got 2 minutes, and then it's fag time.
Okay.
Keep smiling.
Yep.
Last night, outside, when we were just a little bit the worse for wear, and you said the most important thing in learning is emotion.
Absolutely.
What the hell was that about?
It's about engagement, isn't it? I think you've got to be... Learners have got to be engaged, both in the classroom and outside of the classroom. And I think emotion has a huge part to play in that, whether it's laughter, whether it's anger. But I honestly believe that emotion is the thing that really drives learning. It's all about emotion and motivation.
You heard it here first. Thank you very much, Helen.
And you're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. Sounds of the Bazaar, live from Online Educa, live from Berlin, live from a snowy, snowy, cold landscape, but with emotions and warmth inside. It's been a great programme today. Wonderful programme. We've had more guests than we can get on the programme, but don't despair. Snow permitting, we're going to dig our way into the hotel tomorrow if we have to bring you the best of technology-enhanced learning, the best of Online Educa on Sounds of the Bazaar. Thank you to all our guests. Thank you to our wonderful team of presenters. You wouldn't know, but a lot of them were presenting for the first time today, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful show. So, please don't forget, join us tomorrow, 11 o'clock to 11:40 Central European Time, for all the best in internet radio from Sounds of the Bazaar.